Today's daf in Masechet Pesachim, brought to you from Yerushalayim Yir HaKodesh, is daf Lamed, rolling right at the first word on the top of the daf. Just want to remind you that we've been talking about the question of Bittul. And it turns out that we've got a major machlokas over here with Rav and Shmuel on one side and Reish Lakish together with Rabbi Yochanan on the other side. According to Rabbi Yochanan, Reish Lakish was the last shita that we learned yesterday, is that actually it doesn't matter what something is, min b'mino, min b'she'eno mino. The only difference is that if it's min b'she'eno mino, so then you can detect the taste, and then theoretically you're allowed to actually use a taster who is a professional, a goy, obviously. And if it is something that's not detectable because it's falling into its own mean, so then you just rely on shishim. Halacha lemaisa, we don't rely on tasters nowadays. We take everything as being shishim. Mashenkin, we had Rav and Shmuel who held that there's a big difference between mino and eno mino. Eno mino indeed goes according to nosin tam, which is the echad b'shishim, and mino, since it's never detectable at all, it's considered to be bottle, because in a sense it's always detectable, because it's together with the taste that's there, and therefore even b'mashu, it would be us. And when it comes to halacha l'maisa today, to the inyan of chametz, we find that Omar Rava hilchata chametz bizmano bein b'mino ben shelo b'mino is aser b'mashu k'rav. So when it comes, it says Rava to chametz, we paskin actually in a way that's more chomer. Though Rashi understands that Rova is paskining in all Yisrim Shabbatera, bein b'minam, that min b'minam is b'mashuhum, and the only chumra of chometz is that we're going to be machmer even on shelo b'mino, that it's b'mashuhu, and that is what we said yesterday, was a special chumra according to Rav. However, the truth is that it is not necessarily so, because we can paskin, as we do lemaisa, that when it comes to chametz, we're more machmir, like Rav said, but not base it on the fact that normally min b'minay is going to be aser b'mashuhu, but rather we are more machmir on chametz because of the fact that it's an iser karet, that people are not bedili minay, and even if we would paskin like Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish all over, which we do, and we say that either min b'mino, min b'she'eno mino is bato b'dais in time, when it comes to chametz, we are machmer. Halacha l'maisa, now, as the Mishnah Berurah brings, yes, that's true, halacha l'maisa. However, because there are so many shitas that hold that indeed Rava's psak over here was being said dafka according to Rav and Shmuel, and we don't paskin that way, so maybe even chametz is just like anything else. Because how do we know that we make a two-step gezerah? So, I mean, the Shilta is, for instance, paskins that even chametz is batal, like anything else, in shishim. And the Mishnah Berurah says that in a case where you have other reasons to add to a reason to be matir something, like a suffix, and so on and so forth, then you can rely on the Shiltas. Halacha l'maisa, people are generally very makpid to consider even a mashu chametz not to be bato, bein b'mino, bein shelo b'mino, when it comes to chometz. But this is only during yontev. How about shelo bizmano? Well, shelo bizmano, Rava says, I paskin like Rabbi Shimon. And according to Rabbi Shimon, there is no such thing as a lav about chometz she'ovar lav Pesach. So because of that, it's totally bato, and it doesn't matter how much. And it's totally bato, bein b'mino, bein shelo b'mino. Wait a minute. How could Rava say that? Rava was the one who told us yesterday that according to Rabbi Shimon, there's a knas, right? That was the pshat of Rava with that machlokas ravacha. And he said that Rabbi Shimon is made at the Rabbon, and there's a knas. That's how we learned the Mishnah, remember? That since it says it's Bal Yireh Bal Yimatzeh, the meaning of the Mishnah means, since he was over on Bal Yireh Bal Yimatzeh, the Rabbonin don't allow him to be netted from that chametz achra Pesach. So how come all of a sudden Rav is now saying, hey, you don't have to worry about it. If it gets mixed with something else, it's not a problem. Didn't he say, he did. But that knas was only made, it's only if it was unmixed. But if it's mixed, then we consider it to be bottom. We didn't make all the normal chumras that we make about things that normally are batel barov, and we make a shishim and so on, there's no problem. Now, this is Rava l'shitasa, because Rava said, I remember, we used to learn by Reb Nachman, right after Pesach, he said, you can go in and you can buy beer from the B'nai Chela. Now, that would be the Goyim. And that only works out according to Rabbi Shimon, right? Because according to Rabbi Yehuda, the Isser was an Isser, possibly, on all Chomet Shavuot of Pesach, the way the Rav understood it. And apparently, since over here, he's saying that the beer, even though it was made before, it was made during Pesach, there is no such Isser at all, which is a raya that the halach is like Rabbi Shimon, that a chometz of a nochri is totally mutter, because over there, there's nothing to give a knas for at all. Okay, now we move on to one of the most important sugyas, that's nogei halacha l'maisa, when it comes to Pesach. And in fact, there's many issues in this sugya that are nogei all over the Torah. And that is the question of, what do you do with kelim that have been used for something that was osur? What's the question, what do you do with kelim that were used for chametz? So, Amar Rav, so Rav says, look, if you've got these kiderot meaning earthenware, big cooking pots, says Rav, look, you know, you got to break them before Pesach and throw them in the garbage, because since they were used all year round for cooking chametz, so then those things that they absorbed is actually chametz, and you're not going to be able to use it after Pesach. Now, there's a lot of issues that this brings up. And in fact, this is not nogei l'halacha. Rav over here, first of all, is following the sheet of Rabbi Yehuda. Remember, that's how Rav paskened earlier. That we go like Rabbi Yehuda and we say that chometz shavuot of a Pesach is an iser d'oraisa. It's not a knas. Furthermore, he holds that it would be usher even b'mashahu, because note that, I mean, when you're talking about the leftover taste in a pot, you're saying you can't even use that pot after Pesach because the absorbed flavors in the pot are going to be chometz shavuot of a Pesach. I mean, that is a lot less than tarovas, right? So, I mean, this is cholek on everything that we just learned across the board. He holds that it's an isser. Obviously, it's an isser d'oraisa. He's machmer that it's osser b'mashu. And there's another issue that is very problematic here. Normally, as everybody knows, after 24 hours, we consider any leftover taste to be noten tam lifgam. Noten tam lifgam is that since any added tastes are not beneficial, but actually they lower the quality of whatever it is that would be cooked in the pot. So because of that, they can't possibly aser anything after Pesach. He, Rav, holds that noten tam livgam is usher. So as Rashi points out, we don't paskin like him on either count. Because, first of all, we just saw that actually taroves is mutter completely after Pesach. And this is much less than taroves. I mean, mixing actual chometz with other ingredients is a heck of a lot more present than some namby-pamby leftover taste in the side of a kedera, obviously, right? So, I mean, certainly we're not going to usher the taroves. And not only that, but we paskin all over that noten tam lifgam is mutter. And since over here, once Pesach is finished, then it's already, by then, it's obviously noten tam lifgam. It has been used for 7 days. And because of that, there shouldn't be any problem. Now, I know what you're going to ask, and that is that noten tam lifgam is mutter, but only bidyavad. We don't go out to use something lechatchila just because if we did use it, what we used it for would still be kosher, right? So, I mean, like, why are we throwing this out? I mean, even if you hold that it would be noten tam lifgam, if it wouldn't be for the other issue, that it happens to be that we don't aser b'tarovas, so therefore we don't aser the tam in the side of a pot. But, I mean, lechora, the idea of not using something Just because it's of using something, just because that's time of come, doesn't add up. So as we mentioned before, the Ran and over here, Tosfos also adds his voice to those who hold this. If you're going to say that something is unusable totally, and it has to be thrown out because of the fact that it would be not the right thing to do l'chatchila, then that's considered to be b'diavad, not l'chatchila. The moment that something has no use whatsoever, then you're saying, okay, so now you got rid of it. But I thought that's the whole point, that if it's b'diavad, then you don't have to get rid of it. So saying that I'd have to get rid of it up front is the ultimate b'diavad. That's fascinating. As far as we talked about yesterday, the Ran mentions this in the Rif, and Tosfos mentions it as well. Okay, so therefore, halakha l'maisa, we don't obviously do that. We do not destroy anything. And even earthenware, and we're going to see what the issue is in earthenware in a moment, we basically lock it up during Pesach. You put a big sign over it in the Schomet so that you don't come to use it during Pesach. And then after Pesach, you simply go back and use it because of today's sugya and the way that Rava explained the halacha l'maisa just a few moments ago. So now we're about to talk about the issue of kederos. Let me just introduce by reminding you that there's something unique about kederos. Kederos almost always means, by definition, earthenware. And the problem with earthenware is that when it comes to the Beit HaMikdash, obviously there was the story in the Mishkan, the Torah says that anything that had been used for Hegdash that was made out of copper, metallic kelim, have no problem. All you have to do is wash them out with hot water, and then they're not going to have any isser in them. Now, normally, of course, what would the isser be? Would be no sir. If you use something, then by the next morning, any time in it would be usser because it was an usser. So the Torah says, okay, so wash it out with hot water. And then that is what we call hagalah. So you can use boiling hot water and that will take out any of the taste. But that's only in metal. The Torah goes out of its way to make sure that we understand that anything that was made out of cheres has to be broken and thrown out. Now, why is that? Why can't we just kosher it? So it seems quite clear that the point that Torah is making is that while metal may release the taste that it's absorbed through washing out, earthenware will not. And it actually holds on to other molecules very tightly. It's got an awful lot of porosity, and because of that, it has so much area in which things will be absorbed, there's no way to actually get rid of the taste. Based on that halacha of the Mishkan, we now apply that across the board, and we say, while there are options for getting rid of the taste of Isser in metallic kelim, there is no such option when it comes to earthenware kelim. So therefore, when Rav says you have to break the kederot, what he was talking about was the earthenware kederos, because there's nothing to do with them. Vamai has to think about, well, I don't understand what's wrong with waiting until after Pesach. Lishino acher Pesach, and then couldn't you use them? Shaloba minam, and shaloba minam is only benosin tam, and then there's only a little bit of taste that's left in here by the end of the Pesach, so then it should be mutter. No, it still isn't, because we're gozer, maybe you will end up using them min bimino, and of course, according to Rav, min bimino will always be osir. Now, again, according to Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish, that's not true. And in fact, we paskin like Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish, and we wouldn't worry about it, about making a gezeira like this. Now, Shmuel, on the other hand, says, absolutely not. There is no need to break your pots. You just put them away in a cabinet, and your mashilu lachar zmano, you wait until after Yontev, and then you can use them for whatever you want. You can use them bimino, shalobimino. There'd be no problem. This is Shmuel, who is going l'shitato. Shmuel's shita is, actually, as we'll see, like Rabbi Shimon. And therefore, according to Rabbi Shimon, as we just saw, there is no iser in tam of chometz shavrelava Pesach. There's only an iser on the chometz of a Jew shavrelava Pesach if it's be'ene, if it's not mixed with anything else. Certainly if it's absorbed into a pot, there is no iser. And we know that that's what Shmuel holds. How do we know that? Because Shmuel did not like the idea of kosher price gouging. Kosher price gouging is not a new phenomenon. It's It's part of the human condition, you know. So once you create a market for something, all of a sudden, oh my God, kosher meat is five times as expensive. Nobody could tell you why. Supposedly, it's all these additional expenses that are associated with it, which turns out to add another 20% or so. And that justifies the three or four times the price. Something's cuckoo. So Shmuel, who noticed this price gouging when it came to household goods on Mitzvah Pesach, in which everybody, all of a sudden, all the new pots were like three times the price they usually are. So Shmuel called in the retailers, and he warned them, and he told the Hanud Mezavne Kandi, he told the pot sellers, either you're going to be Ashve Zvine Akandiche, either you bring the prices back down on your pots, and if you don't, I am going to cost you all your business. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to get on TV, national TV, and I'm going to tell them that the halacha is like Rabbi Shimon. Ha! And that means that you got no problem using your old pots at all. What are you going to do then? So this is your last chance. Okay, wait a minute. So then I don't understand. So then if Shmuel held that, I mean, why does he have to threaten them? Why doesn't he just get on TV and do that? Right? So, I mean, if Shmuel holds like Rabbi Shimon, so then Lidrashlu, does Shmuel Rabbi Shimon severely? No, you see, he felt he couldn't do that because actually he was in a location where Rav was the Rosh Hashiva and everybody relied on Rav's Piske Halachas. And basically it would have been inappropriate for him to come out with Halacha like Rabbi Shimon because we just saw in that location everybody was passing like Rav and Rav was very machmir to break all the pots. And he really only used this as a cudgel to get them to lower their prices, but I mean, he felt very constrained because it was Atre to Rav Havi. Anyway, now we get into the same interesting kind of situation where we have a type of oven. Remember the ovens in those days, you remember from Kalim, the ovens were made out of cheres, and there was a tanur that was Tochu Beit Taichia. So what they did was, is they took animal fats and they had gone over the whole side of the oven with these animal fats to absorb, make it basically like sort of more like Teflon. They actually do this with, or did anyway, with aluminum, which was a big problem on aluminum pots once upon a time. And because of that, Rava Bar Ahiloi, who heard about it, he paskin, you cannot use this oven to bake bread in. Because and nobody's going to realize that this bread is actually bisari, because it's been cooked together with these animal fats, and people may use the bread for a nice cheese sandwich, and they'll maybe make a tuna melt, and the tuna melt with cheese and fleishiks is not exactly top kashrus. So he said, better not use it. Even just a plain piece of bread dipped in salt, because Dilma Atilam Yechlobekutcha, since the norm was that you dipped in that milchike dip, remember with a very sharp dip that they had in Bavel. So he was afraid they were going to use it. Problem is, doesn't it say, as the Gemara, Ein Lashinat Ha'isa B'chalav, do not make milchike bread by putting milk into the dough. And if you did, then you cannot use that bread. It's the same situation in the inverse. I mean, we're afraid you're going to make a nice, delicious bologna sandwich with that milchika bread. So you can't use that. Kayotzebo. And similarly, Ein tashin et atanur ba'alya. Now look, this is exactly his case, right? It says over here, you cannot use animal fat to grease up the tanur with. And if you did, then kol hapat kula asura. But look at the key words over here, which are very problematic for Rava Bar Ahiloi, because Rava Bar Ahiloi said you're not allowed to use this ever. You can't bake bread in that tanur ever. And here it says, achi asikata tanur, until the oven is reheated, and then it gets rid of all of the taste of that animal fat, which is mashma, that it's only a problem until such time. Hohu sakata nur miyashari. Once it would have been cooked up, heated up again, then that would have gotten rid of the taste of the animal fats. And Rav Bar Ilai claims, no, there's nothing to do. It's always going to be usur. So this is a tiyufta, the Rav Bar Ilai. This is 100% a tiyufta. And there is therefore no such halacha, because you would be able to cook up the tanur. Now, this is very problematic. I'm so confused. I mean, first we learned before that even the kederot, which are the pots, and pots have less of a heat absorption than a tanur, where you really, really put that temperature up. There's lots of pots you can't even put into an oven, which is that where you turn up the oven very high, right? It's got to be oven safe. So, I mean, if you're talking about a tanur, and in fact, as Tosfos explained back on Amud Aleph, that the understanding of the whole psak over of Rav Bar Ilai was based on the fact of the special heat that is in a tanur that is going to make it a problem. Because look, gentlemen, I don't want to confuse you, but I mean, let's just think about this for a moment, okay? Let's say you would have baked the bread in there. What's the big deal? Let me ask you something. If you go ahead and we have a classical case that we had in Chulin, but everybody has this problem come up in their house so often. You make something parav, in this case, the bread, the parav of bread. You make something parav, whatever. Maybe you cook up some fish, right? You cook it in a fleshika pot. And now you want to use the fish with cheese, right? So are you allowed to use the fish with cheese or not? Okay, so according to the Sephardim, you're allowed to use the fish with cheese right away. It doesn't even need to have a 24-hour period between the time that you use the fleshika pot. Because why is that? Because it's called not bar not, no tain tam, bar no tain tam, the hetera. Let me explain that, because it's going to be an important concept here in the Inyanim of Chametz. When something gives a tam into something else, that's called a no tain tam. Okay, so now if you've got a piece of bread that absorbed taste of a piece of meat, so that would be no tain tam into the bread. But this is the no tain tam of a second order, because first the meat put the taste into the pot, or in this case the oven, then the oven turned around and gave that taste into the bread that was baked in it. That is called the not, meaning the no saint tam, the son of a no saint tam. So it's a secondary taste. And the halacha is that if that taste was not usur when it was absorbed, I mean, there's nothing usur about meat, you just don't want to use it to eat with milk, right? So, okay, a no saint tam that isn't even usur, and that's just barely traceable, because a no saint tam, bar no saint tam, of heter, is not considered to be meaningful in any way. And therefore, you can go right ahead and eat that supposedly fleshed, don't tell this to your wife because she probably is grounds for divorce, but you can go right ahead. I always sneak it out of the fridge when necessary. I never let her see this. She absolutely flips out, right? But I've got I love having like meat sauce with pasta. You know, the pasta is always cooked in this milk of the pot, you know. And if I'm caught taking the pasta and mixing it with the milk sauce, I'm dead. Okay, so. But anyway, so according to Sephardim, you can use it right away. According to Ashkenazim, if there's 24 hours from the time of the absorption, even the Ashkenazim or Matir. So Tosfos asks, so I understand, so what's the big deal? So you cook the bread in a fleshika oven, so I don't get it. What's wrong? So now you'll go and you'll eat it with milchiks. Who cares? So basically, the issue over here is, as Tosfos says, look, I mean, it's got to be something about the nature of like the oven in this case, that these ovens apparently were like so hot, and that maybe we're worried about a much deeper absorption. So he says, they bishop, this type of thing, they're bala yoter midai. That's like too much for us to just ignore. Now, there are other approaches about maybe there's no way to get off the actual oily substances. Since over here we're talking about grease, so you're never going to be able to actually clear that out. Anyway, but I mean, the point is that, look, I mean, we're talking about really an issue that's really a bit far-fetched. We're being very machmer over here. And we just showed that Rav Bar Ilai was wrong, and that it was wrong of him to say that, because certainly when it comes to heating up that tanur, we'd be able to get rid of that problem. And that could be, remember, even though the Torah says that well, cheres, you'll never be able to get the taste out of cheres. Maybe that's true. It doesn't necessarily mean that you, for instance, the Rambam understands this whole sugya of meaning that even when it's cheres, you will be able to get rid of enough of the taste that we're not going to go out of our minds and be machmir even on a nice tam and so on. You see, that's the point. So the issue over here, when we show that Rav Bar Eloi is wrong, bottom line is that we can rely on some level on using heat on those kalim. So now the problem is, Ravina says to Ravashi, so now I really don't understand it. I mean, didn't we just say that it's okay to heat up this tanur? And we showed that Rav Bar Eloi was wrong. So now why do we have this psak of Rav that says that you've got to bust up all of your pots on Pesach? Why can't we heat the pots the same way that we were going to heat the tanur? They're both made out of earthenware, so apparently you can at least heat things up to a point where you don't have to worry about the nosing tam afterwards that is going to come out of the pot. So why did we make... Nobody said that Rav is wrong because of this. What am I missing over here? So he told him, Ravashi told him, well, you know, Rav understands this whole idea to be talking about a tanur of matechet. And yes, tanur shel matechet, of course you can heat up a metal oven. That was never a problem. And he was talking about actually things that were made out of cheres. So that's very different because cheres, as we said, you have to work out. It's never going to be able to get rid of its taste. That's one approach. Now, that's a difficult approach. Because, I mean, always when we talk about the tanur, we're not talking about the tanur shel cheres. I can tell you a different pshat. And this is a fascinating pshat. I'm going to tell you that actually both cases, Rav's case about pots is talking about earthenware pots, and this case about a tanur is talking about an earthenware tanur. However, there is a difference between an oven and a pot. And what is that difference? The difference is the level of heat that you're able to get to, because when you're talking about a pot, you're only making a fire on the outside or the bottom of the pot, and that does not directly affect the area of the pot where all of the absorption was. It indirectly affects it, and it's also open to the air. I mean, when you're talking about over here a closed tanur, and the fire is inside of the tanur, now that's a completely different level of heat. And ze hesekan mibifnim, v'ze hesekan mibachot. So it makes a big difference about where it is that you make the actual heat. Okay, that's fine. I understand. So then what's the problem? Why can't we have these pots koshered by making them hot on the inside? So take boiling hot coals and fill up the pot with boiling hot coals so that you get this tremendously high temperature inside of the pot, not outside of the pot, which, now, by the way, I just want you to know another. There's a lot of, like, detailed issues here that are kedai to keep in mind, even where they're not nogeya, specifically the sugya that we're learning on. But you've got to get the sense of the picture. Remember, like we were talking about in the Siyum of Erevin, it's always the picture of the overall structure of things that is very important. Don't attempt in any sugya, especially sugyas like this that have 20 or 30 different elements that need to be taken into consideration, do not attempt to reduce it to an easily recognizable chart, which is what all these books try to do, because there is a lot of hanky-panky that is being done lahalacha. When I say hanky-panky, what I mean is judgmental issues about how far do we go when we have a consideration of various issues that have different weights. So it's very difficult to give over those weights. I mean, yeah, maybe an AI system would be able to pick up patterns in the poskim, but the fact is that those weights require a great deal of das. So how much are we going to be makbid on something which we were looking to be more machmer by how much on something that was a chiyev kores, but then was it also something that was lo bodomine? And was it something that was a gezera? Because it's very often that you're going to come to use it for something else. And how often is it used for the extra heat? Is it usually used for the lower heat? And can we go according to the normal usage? And if we do, is it a nosin tam bar nosin tam of hetera? Or do we call it isura because about at the time that it was absorbed, you wouldn't, and a million other things, right? So this goes on and on and on, each one of which has a very delicate weight attached to it. So because of that, I bring up some of these sugyas, and it's difficult to see on the spot what the implications would be under other circumstances. But as you know, the Gemara keeps doing this. It breaks things apart more and more so that you can see the implications. Sorry. And one of the questions over here that I think you should take into consideration is this idea of using heat. There are two approaches to it, and there are a lot of differences in certain cases. One approach is that by this level of application of heat, you're able to get a material to loosen its hold. So obviously, there's going to be a level of energy at which you tear apart the bonds that a molecule is sticking with something else, right? That's obvious. So the question is the application of heat, is the point of it that it loosens the bonds to the oils and that allows them to be exuded? Or is the fact that, no, that's not the point. The point is that once you've applied that level of heat, then the iser is considered to be burnt up. Not that it's gone, but it simply is no longer considered to have any taste because it's been oxidized or whatever. Now, there's a lot of differences in that in various cases. But whatever the issue is, if we're talking about the level of heat that's being applied, so then why don't we simply apply that level of heat? Because, I mean, you just said it's a tiyufta. That means you've accepted halacha lemaisa, a braita that says you can heat an earthenware tanur. So I want to do the same thing, and I want to heat an earthenware pot. Says the Gemara, because if you try to tell me that, so do that. I will tell you we don't allow you to do that. You're right that theoretically that could be done. The problem is that the chances of damage to your pot if you do that are very high. And there's probably going to be a little bit of hesitation for you to go and do it that way. So what you're going to end up doing is doing it wrong. You'll put the fire up a little bit more on the outside, or you won't fill it up completely with the heat on the inside, or whatever the case is. And because of that, that is called a gezera of chayes ale. Chayes ale means you're going to be just might feel bad about losing your pot. Mishum depaka, because oftentimes it will break because of the application of that level of heat. So because of that, it would actually depend on the case, because there are certain types of pot-like devices that are made out of cheres, but that are meant for very high internal temperatures. And that is called a buchia. Buchia is a type of very thick tile. So it's like a couple inches thick of solid earthenware. I mean, this thing weighs a ton, and it's almost impossible to break. It's so thick. It's made for doing whatever you want with. You can put it inside of a bonfire and have things inside of it to fry up or to bake up. You can put a bonfire in it, basically, fill it up with hot coals and use it for baking potatoes or whatever, and it doesn't break. So because of that, even though when you normally would be using it, let's say, for frying, so you would put fat on the inside, meat fat. So it's a seko mi bachutz, and therefore normally it would be usher even if you heated it up. But if you filled it up with coals, so then it would be perfectly okay, because certainly that's part of its normal use. There's no reason why that would be any different than the tanur, because you will not be chasale. That is part of its normal usage. So that should be the issue. Now, there's another question over here. And that is, how then do we understand the Torah? I mean, if the issue is in the Beis HaMikdash, and you know they found all of these broken Kli Cheres, I mean, thousands and thousands of broken Kli Cheres in the area of Mishkan Shiloh, which is how they were able to identify where the edge of the Mechitza was for the heter of there was no mechitza, but it was Kol Haroya, where the area of Kol Haroya, right at the end of the Kol Haroya areas, thousands and thousands and thousands of pieces of broken kelim of cheres for people who were eating their kachim and then weren't going to take it outside of the Kol Haroya. But why, as Tosis points out, I mean, if Lamaisa, it's possible to be machshir all of these things. So, I mean, you're telling me that we can't be machshired because we're chayshish? I mean, I thought the idea over here is that it's possible to do it, and what we always could do, and the Gemara asks this actually in Zvachim, what we always could do is we could put it back into the original manufacturing kiln. Because a kiln is basically the way it was made in the first place. If you put it into that level of heat, then, I mean, either it survives or it doesn't survive, but certainly you would be able to be machshir it that way. And the Gemara over there, the only answer that the Gemara has in Zvachim to that question is the fact that you are not allowed to make industrial furnaces in Yerushalayim because of pollution. So this is a very early pollution takana, along with other special gezeras for Yerushalayim. All types of pollution were prohibited, and smoke, you weren't allowed to make these kivshonot. No, that's the answer. But, I mean, we're not talking about in Yerushalayim over here, and what in the world is the problem? So why can't we just put it back in a kiln? And if you actually could, then why is the Torah basically saying that it never is yotze midei dofyo liolam? I mean, that really isn't true. So the Rabbeinu Tam explains that the concept over here of eno yotze midei dofyo is where the kli is the same kli that it was. Remanufacturing a kli is not considered to be yotze midei dofyo. It's considered to be remanufactured. And because of that, it's considered to be a completely new kli. So once you heat something up to that temperature, you're talking about a new kli cheres. So that would be the point. Okay, this is Tosfos' answer. You really could, but then it wouldn't be the same kli cheres. So what's the point? Yeah, we're not talking about that. That's all. The other Rishonim argue, and they say it's maybe just because it's not the derech to put pots back into a kiln and things like that. But again, remember to take all of this into consideration when you're thinking about the sugya. Now, how about knives? Amalei Ravina L'Ravashi. What about knives on Pesach? So how do you make a knife kosher? A knife has got, now here again, there's multiple levels of usages of a knife, right? So knives can be used with things that are boiling hot. Knives could sometimes be used maybe to hold something over a fire directly, and therefore they would be used by the Eish. Or knives could be used perhaps in just for things that are taken off of a Kli Rishon. I mean, how exactly do we define the use of a knife? The reason why it's important to define it is because we have a klal that we're going to be getting to in a moment, which I hope you're keeping track of all of these klalim. I haven't been telling you what to write down. Please keep track, because these are each one of these is a technical term. Well, a number of them we talked about today, not barnat, not barnat te'atera, not barnat te'isura. We've been talking about min b'mino, talking about min b'she'ino mino. And we talked about nosin tam. We talked about kapila nuchra. We talked about a klicheres bin yotzi midei dofyo. And we talked about hachzora to the kivshan. And we talked about the question of what yotzi midei dofyo we had seko bibifnim or a seko mibachutz. And this is another idea, new idea, which is called kibol o kach polto. Kibol o kach polto means the same level of absorption that had caused the issur to be absorbed in the thing is the level of its exudation of what it absorbed. So in other words, if it's something that you use over a fire, then you're going to have to use the heat, the equivalent heat, to get it out. If it's something that you use in a Kli Rishon, then you'll have to use the equivalent heat to get it out. If it's something that you only use on cold things, so then you just have to use cold water to wash it off, and so on. And this basically, we saw in the Klei Midyon, Kol Davar Asher Yavo Ba'esh, right? Yavi Ba'esh, we call it Kol Davar Asher Yavo Ba'mayim, Yavi Ba'mayim. So we get the general idea of Kabbalah Kach Polta. Now, the question of a knife is that a knife has multiple usage. And the question is, how do we determine what the usage is? There's here we have an idea, which is also big machlokas halakha lemaisa. What does this idea actually mean? But the idea is that if we go according to, there's another rule to write down, Rov Tashmisho. Rov Tashmisho is its standard usage. But there's a big machlokas haposkim, whether that means because you don't know, or does it mean even if you know for a fact that you had used this knife, let's say, on as a spit once or something, right? And then and normally you didn't use it for that, you would still go according to Rov Tashmisho. And again, this would be one of those weight issues that has to do with an overall balance of how you understand the chumras that the Rabbanon gave, that they allowed you to rely on Rov Tashmisho for issues that are, remember, almost always entirely issues the Rabbanon, and therefore they can be koveya, the klolim, in ways that seem to them to make the most sense in terms of the gezeras that we're applying over here. So that's what he was asking. When it comes to chametz, so what do we do with a chametz knife? Is there a way to make that knife kosher for Pesach? So Ravina said to him, so Rav Ashi said to him, listen, you know, I'm not the guy to ask because in my house, we get new knives. Ravina said to him, yeah, I mean, if I had your income, I'd get new knives too. Thanks a lot. I mean, I'm talking about normal people, okay? What are we poor suckers supposed to do? So Tenach Mar, I mean, yeah, Efshele, you know, you can afford that. But what do we do? So Rav Ashi said to him, I don't mean, you think I'm like completely insensitive? I didn't mean that I go out and buy knives and therefore, you know, you should do the same. I mean that I turn the knives back into new knives. That's what I mean. So it's ke'en chadataka. I mean that I make them as if they are new. They're like new. You know, it's like those computers they sell. Yeah, right. Remanufactured, yeah. And we'll give you a great $200 discount, you know, for $5,000 worth of garbage. So it's like new, remanufactured knives. So what do I do? Because, I mean, we've got a real problem with a knife. Because the offer, I mean, you're talking about a knife. What if you got a wooden handle on the knife and you use the knife in the fire? How exactly are you going to put the knife in the fire till it gets red hot? And meanwhile, what happens to the wooden handle? But I've worked that out, you see. Because what I do is I take the handle and I wrap it in this thick clay, right? And that protects the handle from the heat. And then I put the blade I put into actual fire. And then I take off the clay and then I boil the wooden handles in water. Now this itself is very problematic. A lot of discussion about how exactly gets away with this, because this implies that you can be magil things in separate stages. And we're going to see later on the problems about that approach. But anyway, the halacha is that since you do not normally use knives in fire, so then you can just put the whole thing, the wooden handle, together with the blade, put it together into a boiling water, and you put it into Kli Rishon. There's a question whether over here Kli Rishon means a Kli Rishon that is currently on the fire, and that is not necessarily the meaning of Kli Rishon. Kli Rishon means the Kli that was on the fire, and then there's also Kli Rishon She'al Ha'esh, and that is a machlokas rishonim about how to paskin over. And again, this is a function of Rov Tashmisha. So if you're saying that normally knives that are used on something that was cooked are not used while it's on the flames, so then what we'd be saying is give it the same level of heat, but it doesn't have to actually be on the flames. Now, as you know, we are machmir, and we do all of our hagola while it's actually on the flames. You make sure it's still bubbling and so on. And otherwise, everybody makes a big fuss. Oh, wasn't a good hagola. And they got people sitting over. There's not enough bubbles. But okay. But it is a big machlok is what the bichlal, it really needs to be bubbling. Omer of Vinabreda of Yeshua, how about a mixing spoon, you know, that's made out of wood? Eitz parur. So it's enough over there to be magilo barotchin. There you have to use boiling water. And the rotchim would be a Kli Rishon, because that's the normal way. that it's used, and clearly he holds, and here's where the Gemara is using that terminology that we spoke about earlier, kosava kivol o kach polto. Look, the way in which you usually absorb is the way in which things are usually exuded. So that is the general klal. Again, the question over here is, if we're talking about an Eitz Parur that's usually used after you took the pot off of the stove, so it's used in your soup pot, or then it wouldn't require on the fire again. Bo minei mimarema. What about glazing? Does glazing change a klicheres into a non-klicheres? Because, I mean, basically the idea of the klicheres is that it's extremely porous, and I mean, you can see it's not solid earthenware. It's got like all types of, you know, surface that is not smooth, which is why it's glazed, and that allows it a tremendous amount of surface area where there's place for it to absorb taste. But what if I glaze it? If I glaze it, that's a question over here, what type of glaze we're talking about. Most of them, unfortunately, understand glaze to be lead glaze, which is what they used then, and it was China and so on. It was not glass glaze. I mean, it was just the word glaze. There are some who learn that it's glass, but then that gets into the whole question of what is the din of glass glaze, which we'll talk about, but this is one of the more modern issues. But anyway, if you're using mani d'kunya, so then do they have a din of a metal lead container, in which case you can be machsher them, the way you could be machsher your silver becher, or are they still considered to be able to absorb through the glaze? And therefore, you'd be talking about a klicheres again. So, can I use them during Pesach? Does the taste get into the underlying earthenware? Now, there are different types of materials that are used for earthenware. So, as Rashi says, there's very high alum content, and that is extremely absorptive. However, it has a greenish color. So, you can always tell when something was made out of high alum content clay, and it was fired up that way. That, for sure, is always going to absorb. No glaze is going to prevent the absorption from that. That's Vaday Asiri. I'm only asking my question about the darker, the dark varieties, which is black, or the very light varieties, which is white. So it's like, you know, sort of porcelain, pretty kalim, and then they've got a glaze on them. Is that okay, or do we consider there to be absorption underneath that? And I also want to make something else clear. I mean, glaze has to be put on very carefully. If you've got, as you often find in cheapo kind of mugs and containers, there's like little bubbles in the glaze or cracks in the glaze, which is called kartufne. So if you've got wrinkles in the glaze, forget it. That's vadai usur, because anything is going to be absorbed through the smallest break in the glaze. I'm asking you, where you have a very well-done glaze, it's completely smooth, you don't find anywhere that it's in any way not reflective and so on, what's the din? So Maremar said to him, look, I can only tell you by experiment what the din is, because experimentally, I have actually taken a look at these things. I had a mug, and the mug was well glazed, and it was a white or dark earthenware mug. I filled it up with coffee, and I saw that the outside of the mug actually had stains from the coffee and had steamed up from that coffee. So obviously, you know, find this often on teacups, where it goes through to the other side and leaves a stain on the other side. So because I saw that it was sweating through the kli, it's impossible that it didn't absorb. I mean, how would it have sweated up through the other side? So I can only tell you on the basis of my own experiments, chazinolo de midaite, they do sweat, in which case they obviously absorb. So once they absorb, you're back with the other problem. The problem is, hatorah he'ida al kli cheres, it never gets rid of whatever it is that's following it around with the taste. Some, by the way, understand the word dof yo as a shortening of dof no. It can't get out of its sides. Not dof yo. Not the standard understanding of it. But in any event, that's the idea. So then the question is, Mariamar, how do you explain the difference between this and your psak about wine? Because you paskind that when it comes to madorish maremar, that when it comes to mane de kunya, and mane de kunya is exactly what we're talking about over here, glazed. That's why I asked you, mane de kunya. And you said, I mean, you even went further than I even asked. You said whether it's dark, whether it's white, or whether it's green. Oh, God. I mean, the green, I thought the green stuff really absorbs. And you said it's mutter. Even if you had stored, obviously we're not talking about yain nesach, d'oraisa, we're talking about stam yenom over here. So you had stored non-kosher wine in there. And you said you're allowed to use that. Why are you allowed to use that for yain and not allowed to use that for chametz? I mean, if you want to try to tell me that, well, obviously I don't mean it, but yayin nesach d'oraisa. I'm talking about an isidra banan, whereas chametz is d'oraisa, so I'm going to be more machmer on the d'oraisa. Well, then that is a very weak answer, because generally speaking, the rule is that kol d'takun rabbanan ke'en d'oraisa takun. Please write that down. Also, as a general rule, where we have a takun d'rabbanan, they don't apply different standards, because that's extremely confusing. The only place that we find that that's done, remember, is where it's done on purpose to notify people that there's something crazy about what's going on, and that will make sure that they know it's only the Rabbanan, because this makes no sense. Like the case of the Mashkin that are Metame Kalim and so on, that are only Metame from the outside, and the outside and not Metame the inside, unless it touched the inside. That's insane. So people will say, oh, well, okay, that was just to remind us that we shouldn't burn Truma and Kachim. But generally speaking, whatever the halacha is, if something's not going to be batal, mini rice is not going to be batal, and it isn't Rabbanan either. So what's the difference? Oh, my life, what's the difference? It's pretty obvious what the difference is as far as I can see it. Nobody uses hot wine. Wine is kept chilled. So when it comes to chametz, yes, chametz, of course, is used for hot things all the time. So you can have a nice hot bun and so on. And if you're talking about something that is cold, okay, if it's cold, then there's no penetration. And therefore, there's no problem. Amar Rav Barav, Amar Rav Barashi, Amar Shmuel, actually, that's true, even when it comes to chametz. If you have chametz kelim that are never used for anything hot, and all you do is you put cold things in there, like a cereal bowl or something, you can use those kelim on Pesach, as long as you wash them out well. Chutz min beit se'or, unless you're talking about where you keep your sourdough. So over there, it can stay there for like days on end, with the very, very strong leavening agent that gets absorbed over time, that you can't use during Pesach, because over there, chimutzo is kashe, it's very, very intense. And there's another case, Amar Ravashi, look, if you have a beit charoset, beit sa'or, chimutzo kashe dami, there's oftentimes that people will make a dip. And they keep the dip like for months, you know. So you have vinegar and you mix it with a little bit of flour or a little bit of meal, you know, or oatmeal, whatever, to dip it in together with other flavors. That's also very intense. And that's the equivalent of a beit sa'or, because that flour taste of chametz gets in there. They have these kneading bowls, big, gigantic kneading bowls in mechuza. Since they are always used, and sometimes people, you know, women sometimes will leave the dough in there overnight and let it rise and so on. That's the same thing. That's the equivalent. The mashubu chamira, you leave it in there for a long time. That's a kibet sa'ar shikmutza kashadami. That's exactly the same. What am I, stupid? Obviously, that's the same. Pshita, I mean, that is the same. It's not, it's like the same. It's the same. What are you trying to say? Pshita, what's Rava teaching me? No, because you see, they're very wide. So normally a beit sa'or is like deep, but this thing is very wide, so it's got a lot of circulation. So maybe something that is given the ravicha, so you would say shalit pu avira velo bali, something that is remember, it's going to be the tastes, and most of these things are just these are molecular exudations. If you've got a lot of area that's open to the air, then the absorptive area is much less likely to absorb, because obviously things will take the path of least resistance, and most of that is going to go into the air, not into the kli. So you might have thought that that's called shalad ba'avira. We don't have to worry about the overly intense belia. Therefore, it is a big chiddush that you don't take that into consideration. You take into consideration merely the type of usage of intensity that is local, up against the kli that you're using. You don't look at the overall question of how much is getting into the air.